The Man in Line with Andy Wint.
Faster Mike, good afternoon. 6 minutes after 12 midday, Man in Line's on till 1, and today, Home Affairs and Justice. The Home Affairs Department's function, really, the core purpose is to keep people safe on the Isle of Man. Safety, security, divisions of Home Affairs support every single aspect of community in the Isle of Man, 24 hours a day. That's the purpose, and the Minister and the Chief Executive are here today on Man in Line. Get in touch, text 166177, email studio@manxradio.com and call 6613 68. Jane Paul Wilson is with us today. Faster Mike, good afternoon.
Faster Mike, Andy.
Obviously you were MLC, you chose a public mandate, you got it, you're Home Affairs Minister. How has the past, what, 8-9 months been?
A whirlwind, I have to say. Extremely busy, but very, very enjoyable, and an absolute privilege to be able to take on this responsibility.
What do you know now about Home Affairs that you didn't know before?
Well, I think every day is a school day, actually, if I'm honest, Andy. I think there is so many aspects that we are tackling. We published our delivery plan a little earlier this year. And, you know, we've got a lot of things that we want to try and tackle and get to grips with, because I think there's a lot we have to be proud of. I think, you know, you've referenced that Home Affairs staff work 24/7 to keep the island safe, and they do a fantastic job. But where there are opportunities to improve, to do more efficiently and effectively, absolutely, we should be working towards that.
OK, Dan Davis is Chief Executive. Dan, faster Mike, good afternoon.
Faster Mike, Andy.
A lot of people don't quite understand where the function of a chief exec starts and the minister finish. Policy, process, who fits in where?
That's a really good question. So the minister is responsible for policy, and under the legislation, the majority of the functions of the department are exercised in the name of the minister. So my role as chief executive is to advise the minister on policy matters. I'm accountable for the expenditure of the department. So Department of Home Affairs has an annual budget of around about £36 million. I'm responsible for the appointment of officers across the organisation, and we have a role in the general day-to-day running of the organisation. So the sort of the policy and strategy sits with the minister, and the execution and delivery of that is my responsibility.
Okay, and in no way is the Home Affairs a profit centre for government. Who decides the budget? Who asks Treasury for the money?
Well, the budget process is set annually, and it's a standard process across the whole of government. And what happens is that round about kind of June, July, August, departments start looking at their expenditure and looking at items of growth, or where we've got new services, and the department assesses the need and then asks the different areas within the department whether there are requirements for additional budget, and that goes through a scrutiny process in the department. And before any budget bids are then put forward to Treasury for consideration, they go through political scrutiny in the department, and we ask, are we doing the existing services as efficiently as possible? That's considered by Treasury, and Treasury then make a recommendation to the Council of Ministers on the overall shape of the budget.
Okay, first call is David with us. David, you're live with Jane Paul Wilson and Dan Davis.
Hi, Andy, and the rest. Just reference to recently the Chief Constable made a statement, I think it was a couple of months ago there, that some of the laws of the Isle of Man were outdated. It's a three-point question, if I could put them all out to you. Is what is the department doing to refresh the laws, bring the laws up to date for the island, and a new, you know, we're in a new era now, what are we doing about that? The other question would be how is the department monitoring or seeing the effectiveness of community policing? There was a big issue for community policing. I don't know whether the population, the people I talk to, sometimes feel that the community policing isn't effective, doesn't know them. My own thoughts are, too, that they don't seem to revolve in the community. Douglas seems to get the lion's share, or when a politician whinges, they get speed counts done. And the final thing from me is, what's the department doing for community service? I hear on the grapevine, I've heard a lot of times too, some of it was appalling, that because of petrol, they weren't allowed to use petrol lawnmowers, they weren't allowed to use petrol trimmers. I did write to the former prison governor and suggested to him that the whole string of electric equipment coming on now, because these people want to do community service and discharge their duties from the courts. So it's up to you as a department to fund the equipment that, so they can do the community service for the community good.
Okay, all right, thanks, David. All right, thanks for calling today. Jane Paul Wilson?
Yeah, thanks, David. I think they're really good questions, actually. So, first of all, I think, David, your first question was about the legislation, and you're right. The Chief Constable, I think, was talking specifically about our firearms legislation, which is out of date. It is, I think, from memory, I think we've got two acts, which are something like 1947 and 1968 or something around about that.
In what way outdated?
Because I think they don't keep pace with the times in the way we move on. So in terms of how firearms are licensed, in terms of the type of firearms covered and so on. And also there's an allied issue when it comes to an issue like firearms, which is to do with people's capacity and so on. And we have got the capacity bill actually moving through the House, or the first part of all our capacity legislation moving through the House of Keys at the moment. But to the point about refreshing legislation, I think this is a really significant point that David's raised. If people may have heard me talk about the fact that in the last administration, three really big, important modernising bills were brought through the branches of Tim Walz. So we had the Domestic Abuse Act, which is to fill a gap in our legislation as far as domestic abuse is concerned. The modernisation of the Sexual Offences and Obscene Publications laws through that act, and the Justice Reform Act, which is a critical piece of legislation to try and modernise how our criminal justice system can work and address offending. The issue is, I think, Andy, and I think it's a good opportunity for me to reiterate this, when we pass these big pieces of legislation, that's only the start. To actually bring them into effect and make sure they deliver on what we intend, there's a whole lot of work that then has to follow on from that. Sometimes that's in the form of detailed regulations about how these pieces of law are going to operate. But actually, it's also about gearing up our services. So that might be about training. It might be about access to specialist provision. All of those pieces of the jigsaw have to be put in place. So there's a lot of work going on at the moment in the Department of Home Affairs and with other relevant agencies, which might be, for example, Manx Care, the courts and general registry, the prosecution, the constabulary and so on, to actually gear up to make sure we can deliver these pieces of legislation. And as Minister, I didn't want to dilute the importance of delivering properly on those by trying to run before we can walk by doing lots of other new primary legislation. Having said that, David is right. We need to update our firearms legislation. We've got work to do around our fire services and fire safety. We have on our agenda a sentencing bill. So in the legislative programme for this administration, we absolutely recognise that work has to be done to refresh. And it is there, but we have to be realistic about the resource we've got and how to sequence and prioritise the work we do.
And policing?
So policing... Yes, I think it's a good point about how we best have oversight and monitoring of policing. And I think David talked about community policing in particular.
Everybody wants more police.
Well, I think that's right. I think the other thing is how do we respond to the community? So there are a couple of things that I would just like to touch on. One thing that I used to do when I was a quality champion previously was chair a body called the Isle of Man Constabulary Inclusion Scrutiny Group, which is a great forum with a diversity of representation from different organisations and the community, and a great way of feeding back to the police. I think another thing that has come up recently, that there's a lot of conversation and some work now going on behind the scenes, is around a community speed watch initiative, again, to try and recognising that our roads policing unit can't be everywhere, but actually that communities might want to engage in that and take on some of that responsibility.
Okay, Dan Davis.
And I think it's really important to set out the relationship clearly between the department and the police, in that the department can set the priorities for the constabulary, and it does that every year under statute, under the policing plan. But ultimately, it's an operational matter for the chief constable where he deploys his officers. And I think the department in 2019 received a substantial uplift to recognise that community policing had been significantly underinvested in and had been diminished in favour of other operational priorities. And so the Chief Constable has reinvested in operational policing in communities. And I think that I think if you ask people whether they've got confidence in the police, it's around about a 95-96% confidence in the police. And it's difficult for the police to be everywhere at all times, and their focus is on harm. And lots of the stuff that people don't see is around people being exploited for drugs, for example, and the importation of drugs. And so there's a real balance that the Chief Constable has to make within a limited budget. But I hear David's point, and I think Onchan is a specific area, and there's been a lot of investment of time in officers in Onchan to look at antisocial behaviour, for example, to look at speeding, and I think that will continue.
Okay, Howard's with us now. Howard, you're live with Jane Paul Wilson and Dan Davies.
Good afternoon, guests. The point I was thinking about before there was when you ring up the switchboard to the police station. I remember Gary Roberts saying a long while ago, we have now got a system in place where your call will be answered straight away. It is. But you pass down through a whole recorded message which can run on for about 5 minutes. And then once it clicks into where the reception is, you can wait an equally long time to get through to anybody. As I say, there's a couple of times I've rung up on occasions, and I've actually given up on it. They've been that long by the time they put all the messages out and all this and the other, and they go on to our website. We don't want to do that if we want to speak to somebody. So is there any way of shortening this system whereby you can get through to somebody within, well, the office, in a sense, a human being in there where you can talk to, and they can possibly pass you on to the relevant section.
Okay, Jane Paul Wilson.
Yeah, Howard, I think, I empathise with what you're talking about, because I think it's a feature of modern life that we all experience, actually, because as more and more things digitise, when we do ring up, quite often we do go through a series of recorded messages. I think just picking up on Dan's point before about the relationship between the department and the police, this is an operational matter that is the sort of thing that the Chief Constable would be best to consider, because to some extent, I suppose it goes back to how you deploy the human beings you have to best effect. But I think it's certainly something that, you know, if the Chief Constable is listening, I hope he will listen to your thoughts and your request.
Okay. Well, I know Gary Roberts is a genuine sort of person, and I much respect his wishes to cut things back. But the initial response to get to an officer or somewhere within the section should be rapid, and there shouldn't be waiting on the line for 10 minutes. But also, one of the other things, now this could be quite controversial. I phoned up last year before, and I put the 141 in front of the number, which normally would disguise the number, going in. Well, incognito, for the choice of a better word. I rang up, and the officer I spoke to, pleasant, very good, and he said, what's your number, and this, that, and the other, and I said, well, I'd rather not, because I don't want to get involved with what I'm reporting. Okay, that's fine. And that went through. And an hour later, that officer rang up, using my number that I'd given, and asked me was everything all right and reported on it. And then several hours later, another officer rang me. And again, this time I was trying to remain anonymous. And there were two officers then were able to contact me on my home number when I'd asked to remain anonymous.
What number did you put in front of your the call, Howard?
141.
You need to put 1471 in.
That's to get the number back. That's to find out who's been ringing.
I think to be anonymous, it's 1471. I think in before.
I think 1471 is you're ringing someone that's rung you, and it will give you the number that's rung. But 141 is normally being discreet on it. And
okay. I think if you think your data has been used in a way that's inappropriate, Howard, then I would absolutely speak to the data protection officer in the police in the first instance. And if you call police, the main police number on 631212 and ask to be put through to the data protection officer, they can advise you. But I think Howard's point about getting in touch with the police more broadly, if there's an emergency, then you should always dial 999 and you'll get an immediate response. And that's actually a function, the joint control room that comes under the department. And these are a remarkable bunch of people. There are 24 people who work in the control room and they handle calls for police, fire and ambulance 7 days a week. And they're a remarkable bunch of people. And we probably don't recognise them enough because they're not seen out on the streets. But Howard's point is, I think people have different expectations about how they can engage with the constabulary. And I know the Chief Constable has invested significantly in technology over the last 5 years. And unfortunately, the project's been slightly delayed through COVID. But the future is that people will be able to go online, for example. And I know not everybody wants to go online, but lots of people do. They can go online and get an update on their crime report, for example, directly without having to talk to an officer at all. And lots of people just want to know where things are up to, where they've got a crime report, for example. But in addition to that, they can submit information anonymously to the police through this system. And in Howard's Howard's view, if he doesn't want to be contacted about it, then this can be done anonymously. But don't forget, there's also Crime Stoppers in the Isle of Man, and Crime Stoppers do a fantastic job in handling anonymous crime reports, which are passed on entirely anonymously without any recourse back to you, to the constabulary, and they handle all of those. So there's another avenue there as well for people.
Okay, all
yeah,
right.
This was an assurance from the constable that I would remain anonymous.
Okay.
And I actually wrote to the chief constable afterwards, and some 3 weeks later I got a letter recognizing that I'd written, and then I got another letter afterwards with a mediocre explanation that is what was happening. Okay. And it certainly wouldn't encourage me to do any calls in the future.
Well, Howard, I mean, this is Andy. I suggest you don't let that go and follow that up with the data protection people.
Well, I did that also, and they backed the police up and said it's just one of those things that they can do.
Right, okay. Thanks for calling,
take
Howard.
Care.
We've got to move on. I want to go to Mark now with us on Man in Line. Mark, you're live with Jane Paul Wilson and Dan Davis from Home Affairs.
Hey, Andy, and hello to your guests as well. Just to put a little marker down for what Howard said there, it is the 141 that you, if you want to remain anonymous, it's not 1471.
Okay.
Just to pick up a little point what Howard said about the police station, the last 2 weeks, I've phoned a police station twice to report crimes. The first time I was told by a police officer that they'd send me an email to confirm it. And when I said I don't have an email, they just said, right, well, fair enough, and left it at that. The second time when I rang up the other day to report a dangerous driver where I live, he was doing 17 or 20 mile an hour zone, I got a receptionist, and that was the end of the matter. Nobody's phoned me back. Nobody's come round to see me. So as far as I'm concerned, what the chief executive of the Home Affairs says there, about 95% of people have, trust in the police. I think he's living in cloud cuckoo land, to be quite honest with you, because the people I speak to, and I do speak to a heck of a lot of people, nobody that I know has any confidence in the police whatsoever.
Whereabouts are you?
I live in Williston. And the majority of people I know, I haven't seen a policeman around here. And let's be honest, we used to have a police station up here until it was taken away from us. We used to see a neighbourhood bobby all the time, and everybody knew them. Now, they won't come near this place unless they come mob-handed. You never see them out of a car. You never see them walking around. All you ever seem to see the police do is driving to and from various coffee shops that are in Maine nameless, and that's it. They sit on the promenade drinking coffee. I've got no confidence whatsoever in the police.
What are the main problems in Williston?
We have a big, big issue in Williston with dangerous drivers. The whole estate is 20 miles an hour, and I know of at least, a dozen people that I've spoke to recently that say that this estate is used for boy racers. You phone the police, you either can't get anybody, which is 90% of the time, or when you do get somebody, you get a receptionist who can barely speak a word of English. She takes as much details as she possibly can from you. She says you'll get a call back, and that's the end of the matter. I'm sorry, Andy. I mean, I used to have massive faith in the police many, many years ago. I've got zero faith in them now. It's getting to the stage where if anything happens, I couldn't care less. If somebody gets broken into, let's sort it out ourselves, because it's getting to that stage now where the police just seem to be like a bloated bureaucracy where people... I mean, why should any police officer on this island be off with stress? They don't actually do anything.
OK, well, let's see what the minister has to say.
OK, Mark, I mean, to your point about the issue of dangerous driving and speeding around estates, I mean, you know, this is a theme that definitely came up on the doorstep for me during the election campaign, and I know for a number of other MHKs. And as I say, our roads policing unit can't be everywhere, but I do know that there is some work with our very valuable special constables who supplement our police force on a voluntary basis to develop out a community speed watch scheme. And that might be something that's of interest to the residents of Willesden. And I hope to be able to see some of that coming forward a bit later.
They may say, why don't you just put speed cameras in?
Well, it's really interesting, actually, Andy, about speed cameras, because I had thought that mobile speed cameras, again, to make maximum use, would be relatively straightforward to introduce. I think what is challenging, particularly at a time when budgets are under some pressure for all the reasons we know about, is the actual infrastructure and technology back office to support those mobile speed cameras. So I think it's certainly something that is to be looked into and to see what's possible. But I think in the short to medium term, whilst that sort of business case or justification for any budget around that comes forward, the idea of community speed watch, which obviously it would be up to communities themselves whether they wish to engage, but that seems to me something that I hope would speak to the sort of concerns that Mark's raising. And I think Mark also raised the other point about stress in the police force, and I have had the privilege of meeting a number of police officers and understanding the vast range of issues they face. And indeed, last week I was at the police graduation ceremony for the latest batch of trainees, one of whom has sustained serious knife injuries supporting someone who was under attack in their home. So I wouldn't want the public to be under the impression at all that our police force don't face some really, really serious, challenging, difficult issues every day, actually.
Dan Davis?
We don't see it all, but I really do think we need to recognise that.
I also don't really recognise that picture of police officers sitting around drinking coffee. I was speaking to a police officer at the graduation ceremony, actually. She just concluded her probation after 2 years, and she told me that she hadn't seen her kids for the last three nights because she'd finished, her shift was supposed to finish at midnight, but she actually finished at 3 a.m. On three consecutive nights, and by the time she'd woken up, her kids had gone to school. So I think, you know, the police in the Isle of Man, considering there are around 220 police officers, they do an amazing job covering the whole spectrum of policing, from community policing to financial crime to dealing with domestic abuse, scams, fraud. And if Mark has a real issue with policing in his area, I think he should probably speak to his MHK to allow them to raise the issue.
Okay. Mark, you've got John Wannenberg and David Ashford. Have you spoken to either of those?
I've spoken to David. I mean, David agrees, not with everything I say, because, I mean, he's a big supporter of the police and stuff, whereas I'm not. But he agrees that there should be more bobbies on the beat rather than stuck in cars and vans.
Okay. Mark, I just want to ask you, Mark, and this is really important, because you used to be a fan of the police, you supported the police, and I think it's important that we know, why has that broken down?
Well, when I was a youngster, I mean, I'm 60 now. When I was a youngster, you could walk anywhere in Douglas and you'd bump into a police officer and you could have a laugh and a joke and a chat with them. Now, they're in vans, they're in cars, you can't speak to them. If you do speak to them, they turn around and say, I'm sorry, I can't talk, I'm in a hurry. And getting back to what the chief executive said there, if he drives down Victoria Street any day of the week, he'll see what I mean about police officers in their cars drinking coffee.
Okay, all right, Mark, we appreciate that point, and that's been well made. Thanks for that. I think one point I will make is that you're always going to notice the police in cars because they've got big yellow stripes down them. I know, because I live near McDonald's, and sometimes you see it. It's just one of those things. We're halfway through. It's 12:30, live with Jane Poole Wilson and Dan Davis from the Home Affairs Department.
Crossroads is looking for support workers to join our team. We need friendly, professional individuals to support people with care needs in group settings, one-to-one, in the community or in clients' own homes, with various hours available. Qualifications and experience preferred but not essential, as training and support will be given. Our application form and job description are online. Crossroads Isle of Man. Visit crossroadsiom.org to find out more.
Did you know that installing a new efficient gas boiler can actually save you money on your gas bill? Manx Gas offers modern, ultra-efficient boilers with smart controls you can use via an app. It means you can be in control of your heating wherever you are. And even better, Manx Gas offers interest-free payments over 5 years so you can spread the cost. Call Manx Gas on 644444 to find out more.
You're sure to find something fabulous at Ramsey Art Gallery, Jewellers and Engravers.
From stunning gold and silver jewellery that you can make extra special with an engraved message, to local prints and gifts for every occasion, Ramsey Art Gallery also stock a fantastic range of watches, including Ted Baker, Citizen, Storm and Accurist.
Plus Seconda, Timex, Sexy and Bulova.
All with lifelong free strap adjustment. You'll love what you find in store when you visit Ramsey Art Gallery, Jewellers and Engravers, opposite the RNLI shop in Ramsey.
It's time to start enjoying the garden. And from barbecues to garden furniture and machinery, tools and plants, Riley's Garden Centre has everything you need. Core Road Braddon and rileys.co.im. Riley's, celebrating 140 years.
Join us for the May Caroline North Live from the Ross Revenge this weekend. We got some great prizes to give away in the shape of money to spend in the Caroline webshop. And we're sponsored all weekend by Miles Steering Box. Join us this weekend from the Ross Revenge with Caroline North and Manx Radio.
All memories. Radio Caroline North.
The Man in Line with Andy Wint.
Faster Mike, good afternoon. We're with Jane Paul Wilson and Dan Davis from the Home Affairs. But Jane's the Minister, Dan Davis is Chief Exec. This is a message in. Cyril says to the Minister, when's the new Chief Constable going to arrive? When does Gary Roberts go?
Cyril, Gary is scheduled to retire at the end of the year and recruitment is underway, but I don't have a date yet for when somebody is due to join us.
Big moment, of course, because Gary, you know, has having a Manx Chief Constable been a plus for you?
I think I don't want to talk about Gary while he's as if he's gone, because obviously he's got more than half a year left.
But it was a point, though, having a Manx Chief Constable.
Absolutely. And, you know, I have huge admiration, actually, for the Chief Constable and the way he leads the constabulary.
OK. And Dan Davis, how does that process work for getting a Chief Constable?
It's quite complicated, actually. And the department's responsible for appointing the Chief Constable, but it's got to be with the approval of the Council of Ministers, and they're consulted as it. So the way we've done it, we've gone out nationally in the UK, we've approached the National Police Chiefs College and the College of Policing and the National Police Chiefs Council. We've spoken to the Superintendents Association, and we went as wide as we could to get a field of people, and then we shortlisted based on a range of criteria. The policing in the Isle of Man is, as we said, it's really complex. And in the UK, policing, as it's become more complex and the legislation has evolved over the year, there are specialist areas, and often police forces rely heavily on each other in other areas to bring people in. So in the northwest of the UK, for example, there's a Northwest Regional Organised Crime Unit, which specifically deals with serious and organised crime. Whereas we have a very small team here who do that, but they also have to do other things. So over TT, their focus will be on keeping the island safe. There are around about 220 police officers, and we'll have at some points 30,000 people here. And policing is done through legitimacy and consent. And they do a remarkable job in doing it. And so the Chief Constable has to get a handle on all of that, but also things like economic crime. The Isle of Man has a huge financial crime responsibility. And we've got a relatively small economic crime unit to deal with that. But we have to deal with complex international money laundering. We have to deal with fraud. In the UK, a lot of that, you wouldn't get that in Norfolk's police force, for example, whereas we've got a sophisticated economic crime unit here that deals with all of that.
Okay, text 510 said, could you ask the Home Affairs Minister why laws surrounding death by dangerous driving don't carry a jail sentence? My niece was killed. The driver walked away with a slap on the wrist. Sentencing in general.
Yeah, so I think I mentioned earlier on, Andy, that in our legislative programme, we are looking to bring forward a sentencing bill. I think, obviously, in individual cases, it is always going to be a matter for the court, quite rightly, because they are privy to all of the evidence and therefore the appropriate sentence for post-conviction based on all the circumstances. But I think where policy comes in is to look at actually what are the parameters we set around offences for particular around sentences for particular offences. So I think in that space, as we come forward to look at a sentencing bill and a sort of policy approach for what we as an island think are appropriate types of sentences for different offences, that's absolutely where there can be that framework that then the courts will apply in practice.
Okay, and Pete said on a similar notice, when are the courts going to make more use of exclusion orders for non-resident offenders?
In terms of, again, that would be a matter for the courts to determine in an individual case. So I think it is really, really important to distinguish. I mean, my role as Minister for Justice and Home Affairs, that is very much around the policy framework. But the application in individual cases will always be a matter for the courts.
And the application in law is actually quite complex and interplays with human rights legislation, for example. So it's quite difficult to do exclusion orders in reality.
Times change, don't they? Stephen, you're live with Dan Davis and Jane Paul Wilson.
Good afternoon, and good afternoon, Andy, and good afternoon, listeners. I wonder, could I just make some observations and questions, please? The first thing is, how have we got on with the inspection of the department and the constabulary that I think was going to be done, but I haven't heard any results of that yet? How is that coming on?
Thanks, Stephen. Yes, you're right. So we had a lot of the inspection work underway at the back end of 2021 and into the early part of this year. At the moment, we are actually waiting for reporting to come back to us. And you're right, it is a really important process, actually, for the constabulary and for the department to be able to have that independent look into us. We specifically asked that the inspection look at issues of governance and oversight, that we look at protection from harm, particularly for the vulnerable, and that we look at capacity and capability around serious and organised crime, as that is a growing threat for the island. So you haven't missed anything, Stephen, but we are in the hands of waiting for Her Majesty's Inspectorate to finish their work and report back to us.
Thank you for that. Now, the second part I'd like to touch on is, I know it's important to ensure the island is protected, but there is the question of human rights and civil liberties and ensuring that we do not have an intrusive society that intrudes too much on people's lives. One of the points of concern for me is there's always a talk of we must have increased border controls and intrusions into our lives as we go away. For example, there's been a great talk of showing ID and dates of birth when people travel on the ferries, etc. Now, no other parts of the British Isles, as I'm aware of, are affiliated with the Crown of England, have a requirement for that. So that would be a big issue for me if the department and the constabulary wanted to have more checks on people coming in than we normally have. What have you got to say about that, please?
Well, I think you raise a really good point, Stephen, because in all of the work that we do to protect the island and prevent and deal with harm, obviously there is always a balance with how that is done in a proportionate way. I mean, I think the analysis that the Chief Constable has, and particularly there are strong liaisons with the North West now, there's increased intelligence about the risks to the island around serious and organised crime. And I think to the extent that there is information that is gathered, targeted intelligence to prevent that harm to the island and to its residents, that's an important part of keeping us all safe. I think other developments around us, though, also influence this. So, you know, you may be aware that in the UK, in Westminster, there was a nationality and borders bill going through. There are some regulations. I don't have the detail off the top of my head, but there are some regulations, I believe, in maritime legislation where the UK will expect certain data to be provided for people arriving there. So this is a developing picture, I think, Stephen. And I think, you know, absolutely cognizant that there's always an appropriate balance to be struck between individual liberty and not overly intrusive processes, but a proportionate and targeted way of making sure that we can act in a way to keep the island and, most importantly, our residents safe.
Okay.
Well, the last part is over the... Now, I know this is not entirely your remit, but being the Justice Minister, I'm sure you'll be cognizant of it. And it comes back also once again to civil liberties, human rights legislation. And during the COVID emergency, there has been a number of alleged breaches in the way people were dealt with at the Mount Murray, the prison with certain inmates, draconian legislation introduced on the island, which no other part of the UK did. In fact, the Council of Europe advised member states to not use prison as a first punishment. And yet we did that right away. We do on the island, I have sadly to say, do think that prison works better than any other form of punishment. Just let me touch on what you said before about the Nationalities and Borders Bill in the UK. There has been a lot of opposition to that, both inside Parliament and outside Parliament. I think there's been a lot of to-ing and fro-ing between the branches. And I would hope that our branches stick up to make sure we get the right balance. So do you think there should have been a particular reference to human rights in the review and civil liberties that the Chief Minister has recently moved?
You're right, the review will be coming forward. And I think human rights legislation informs everything that we do because it cuts across how we act as a, you know, as a government, as a society. So I think to your point, yes, the review is going to take place. And I think that is the opportunity to have a look and critically to take any important lessons that we can from that. I think in terms of the prison itself, I think, you know, there have been some very, very challenging times at the prison through the COVID era and so on. And I don't think anybody takes lightly any actions that may have to be taken. But, you know, I don't think, certainly I do not have concerns that the way in which the prison runs and operates is out of line with human rights legislation. And I think, you know, I am very, having met the Independent Monitoring Board now as a whole and the chair face on one-to-one, I am very assured that through mechanisms like that as well, we do have strong roots in to make sure that prisoners and any detainees can actually feedback any of their concerns and issues, because I think that is an absolutely critical oversight mechanism.
I think it's important as well to say that the way the prison operates in the Isle of Man is unique in that we hold a range of different classes of offender, from vulnerable offenders to people on remand to people between the ages of 18 and 25, women, all of whom would be separated out into separate prisons in the UK. So it's our only prison, and it had to be kept running in a way that was safe and decent and kept capacity available. And I think the prison officers themselves did a really remarkable job through COVID. At some times there was probably 10 officers to run the entire prison. And from a safety perspective and a risk perspective, prisoners were kept safe, they were kept clean, they were kept decent. And I think it's a tribute to the work of the prison officers.
Okay, all right. Thank you, Stephen. Thanks for that. Now, some WhatsApps, and I've got to race through some of those because we're running out of time. Our police officers do a brilliant job. There just aren't enough of them. They're spread very thinly. Police, people don't know the whole problem. The Chief Constable's done a wonderful job, but his hands are tied with the amount of officers now in the department. And another one saying, good afternoon. I'd rather have a bobby sitting in his car or her car after having a break with their refreshments rather than going to HQ. At least they they're visible when they're in their car. And another one saying, I'd love to hear, is there still a business case to fund civil defence when there are 5 Coast Guard teams covering the Isle of Man, a service that covers everything civil defence does? Well, that's this text's words. I think we should spend the money on the fire service, says Bill. We don't hear much about civil defence, Jane Paul Wilson.
Andy, I'm really glad we've got an opportunity to talk about them because they do a remarkable job. So we have one paid individual in civil defence and 47 volunteers. And I had the privilege to join, they train every week. I had the privilege to join them on one of their training nights several weeks ago, and I'm looking forward to doing another one, I hope, in a couple of months' time. But they are amazing, and they go out, you know, searching for missing people. They support our emergency services when they are dealing with critical situations. They are absolutely invaluable, and I would like to take the opportunity to thank our 47 volunteers because they're a real asset.
Yeah, Dan Davis, where do they fit into the Home Affairs jigsaw?
That's a great question, and interesting. Bill's comments on the surface might seem to make sense, but the reality is actually they free up the time for the emergency services. So they create a cordon, for example.
Virtually all volunteers.
They are all volunteers. Every single one of them, and they give up their time and they're on call and they will come out at any time of the day or night. So if, for example, there's an exploded ordnance on the beach, they will create a cordon around the beach. If there are rescues to be done, they will assist with rescuing. They'll provide, if you remember at the fire out at Dorby a couple of years ago, civil defence volunteers went up and set up rest and refreshment centres to allow the emergency services to get on with their job. So the civil defence actually free up time. So if rather than having a police officer manning a cordon for 24 hours, we have our civil defence volunteers. And a lot of it isn't exciting stuff, but they will do it because they want to give back to their community.
What's their authority?
Under the Home Affairs Board Act 1981, the civil defence are established to support the island. And they're unique, actually. They've been phased out right across the British Isles. They're still active in Ireland, but we are really grateful for our civil defence volunteers. And they have a range of skills. They do first aid, they do line rescue, they do hill rescue, and they're all trained. And they give up huge amounts of time. And they're a really important part. So the Department of Home Affairs also has responsibility for emergency planning. And we are responsible for supporting the departments and divisions across the Isle of Man in making sure that they're ready. And in the event of a major incident, then we will support the coordination and response to that. And it's a huge amount of work.
Didn't you just sell the civil defence building on Woodburn Road?
That was the Home Affairs building,
right,
Homefield.
Yeah, right.
Civil Defence actually operate behind our headquarters at Tramode. They've got a huge dedicated facility. You should come down and have a look.
Your headquarters, is that the old waterworks?
Correct.
Right? Yes.
Yeah, the drill hall, as it was.
And how do you recruit civil defence volunteers?
We have a standing number of people, and every year we'll go out and maybe do a recruitment campaign to get... But we've got to have the right people. You know, it's got to be people who are able to respond, who want to fit in, who want to learn new skills, who are available and who are fit enough to take part, and who've got a range of... We've got people from all walks of life. From we've got, I think, there's a 21, 22-year-old right through to kind of 55, 60-year-olds, and they're all brilliant.
OK, we're with Jane Paul Wilson, the Minister, Dan Davis is Chief Exec of the Home Affairs Department on Man in Line today.
Discover why visitors return time after time to the Welbeck Hotel, fabulously located near Douglas Seafront. A Welbeck voucher makes the perfect gift for all occasions, from birthdays and engagements to anniversaries and thank yous. The lucky recipient will love spending it on a delicious meal or overnight stay at the Welbeck. Why not surprise your someone special with a Welbeck voucher? Book today. Call the Welbeck on 675 663 or visit welbeckhotel.com.
Are you worried about what inflation is doing to your savings? Chase Wealth Solutions are holding seminars across the island, talking about the current economic climate, offering guidance on how to navigate it, and how a well-known and widely diversified investment solution may help during these difficult times. We're in Port Erin, Ramsey and Douglas on Thursday the 19th, and Peel on Friday the 20th of May. To find out more, visit chasewealth.im. Chase Financial Services, trading as Chase Wealth Solutions, is regulated by the Isle of Man Financial Services Authority.
For your new bathroom, head to Peacetter, Harris Terrace, Douglas or Spring Valley. In Pacesetter's fully fitted showroom, you'll find the latest bathroom products and designs, from new contemporary styles to traditional Victorian tiles, wall and ceiling panels, accessories and much more. With many ranges exclusive to Pacesetter's, plus professional design advice from the experts, visit Pacesetter Harris Terrace Douglas or Spring Valley.
You can get the best of everything, where the price is twice as nice.
Mental Health Awareness Week starts May the 9th, and you can get involved to help reduce loneliness. Join us on Tuesday the 10th for a brew and a bun at I'll Listen in Douglas, or in Ramsey for our Sea Dip Saturday the 14th. Why not host your own fundraising coffee morning or cake sale at work or school? As a leading mental health charitable organisation, money raised helps us to support the mental health of our young people. Help stop the mental health stigma. Get involved at iolisten.im/mentalhealthawarenessweek.
FC Isle of Man are in the semi-finals of the First Division Challenge Cup, and they'll be hoping to move another step closer to cup glory on home soil this weekend. The Ravens take on Holker Old Boys at the Bowl this Saturday, and will be hoping to secure a home cup final in just over 1 week's time. Join me, Rob Pritchard and Tony Meppen for FC Isle of Man versus Holker Old Boys from 6:30pm this Saturday. Manx Radio will be providing full live match commentary on our AM 1368 and digital platforms.
The Man in Line with Andy Wint.
Fast am I, 9 minutes before one, with Jane Paul Wilson and Dan Davis today. We haven't talked much about the Fire and Rescue Service, but a message, this is for Dan Davis, and I don't know, tell me whether this is true or not, but I'll just read the message verbatim. Why is the Fire and Rescue Service just taken on a local interim chief fire officer for 6 months only, after 6 months, the post being made open to off-island candidates? Does that make sense to you?
It does. So we had the retirement of the chief fire officer after 40 years of service, Kevin Groom, and we wanted to take the opportunity just to reflect on the current structure of the Fire and Rescue Service to understand whether it was still fit for purpose. We've got Her Majesty's inspection, hopefully, in the pipeline for the fire service. We also want to undertake a review of the risks. And so rather than jumping straight into a recruitment, we did an internal expressions of interest for an interim chief fire officer, just to give us a bit of breathing space. So there's no sinister plan, there's no agenda. It's literally taking a stock of where we are with the Fire and Rescue Service and allowing somebody an interim. And it's a development opportunity, right? It's a great opportunity for somebody inside the fire service to make a difference for a period of 6 months. And it's Mark Christian, who is the divisional officer, and I'm sure he'll do an excellent job.
Okay. Whatever happened to that blue central blue lamp facility?
You mean the blue light?
That's
hub.
It, yes.
Yeah. So, well, in our budget for this year, we have a line there for some feasibility work about that. I mean, I think the issue is, and if you go and visit Douglas Fire Station, for example, you will see that its condition is such that it is, if not end of life, then extremely close to it. And I think we have to recognise that some of our infrastructure now is 40, more than that, years old.
End of life, the fire station.
Yep. 1977 it was built.
Yeah, so we have to recognise that as part of strategic planning, there is a need to look at and renew our critical safety infrastructure for our emergency services. I think in doing that, I think it's also important to look at what are the opportunities to actually improve the way we deliver emergency services for the future, and where you can collaborate, find synergies, find efficiencies, then that is what's going to help us, I think, be fit for the future.
And briefly, Dan, what was the purpose, the principle behind this central facility?
It's twofold, really. One is to have a modern facility that meets the needs of modern policing, modern fire rescue service, modern ambulance service, but also to, as the minister said, to allow better collaboration. And rather than having three workshops, three training centres, three offices, three sets of mechanical and electrical support for the building, you have one campus style building which does all of those for all three services and allows us far better collaboration and integration. We're a tiny island, really, and our services work really well together operationally, but there's loads more scope for them to work better together in a more joined up and collaborative way.
Okay, Jane Paul Wilson, your department, I mentioned, it's not a profit centre for government. You have no tangible output. You don't actually produce physical things. If you do your job well, the island feels better. People feel protected, they feel reassured. We heard Mark, he doesn't like people who speed through Willesden. And so people only want Home Affairs when they really want Home Affairs. How are things as far as you're concerned?
I think you're right, Andy. I think it's a very good point well made. And I think we shouldn't underestimate how significant our safety is, and the fact that people don't generally worry about home affairs and the services until they need to use them. And when they do need to use them, you know, a lot of the feedback we get is that they are there. I think it's also an important part of what makes us different and how we remain an attractive place to live and work. I know families who could live anywhere in the world and they've decided to live in the Isle of Man because they feel it is a safe place for their children.
Do you mind criticism?
I think, you know, let's not be under any illusion that things are perfect all the time. That would be not a sensible way to look at things. And things are changing. You know, the demands are changing all the time. Dan touched before on the complexity of policing in the Isle of Man because of economic crime, because of serious and organised crime, because of the rise of things like domestic abuse and sexual and violent offences, but also community policing, speeding, neighbourhood. All of these things are complex. And absolutely, if we don't hear people's feedback, how can we continuously improve?
Okay, we've been with Jane Paul Wilson and Dan Davis today on Man in Line. Didn't even touch on the prison. We barely touched on probation. We hinted at fire rescue. I'm glad we got civil defence out into the open, and also the joint control room, got to mention. Thanks for being with us today, Jane Paul Wilson and Dan Davis. Good to hear from you. And, well, we hardly touched on everything, Jake, so will you come back at some point?
Absolutely. Thank you for having us.
Thanks, Dan.
Love being here again.
That's it for Man in Line. We're back on Monday with another Open Line. In the meantime, have a wonderful weekend. And thanks to Barry Redfern producing today.